We can't change the bus ride times. So as many variables as we can try to monitor and control, it's going to give us a better, essentially, insight and understanding of what's going on with the player and how to drive performance ultimately.
Welcome to the First Beat Sports Podcast, where we talk with coaches and sports scientists to explore the latest in how performance monitoring is making a difference in the NCAA and pro sports alike. We're going to connect you with practical advice from the best in the business to help you take your athletes to the next level. On the line today is Pat Trainer. Pat is the minor league strength and conditioning coordinator with the Tampa Bay Rays, where he works with the club's four affiliate teams. He has previously spent time with the San Diego Padres and Cleveland Indians. Among the topics Pat will discuss is his role in helping develop future talent, the use of heart rate data in Major League Baseball, and the value of data when working with specific positions. So let's get started. Here's your host, head of First Beat Sports USA, Benjamin Jensen.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to this edition of the First Beat Sports podcast. Pat, getting straight to it. First off, it's good to have you here. And could you just give us a little bit of the background and career leading up to becoming the Tampa Bay Rays minor league strength and conditioning coordinator?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I finished college at West Virginia University, the first job I was offered was a private training facility. They had at the time a contract position with St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So I was fortunate enough, you know, right out of college to kind of get exposure to a lot of different wide variety of sports programs, both men's and women's. And it was a pretty big responsibility for someone, you know, at the time with my experience. From there, I was there for about 2 years, at which time I just, you know, kind of wanted to see what else was out there and available. I knew that through some mutual contacts that there was always positions in baseball at the time. A lot of times teams would hire in the offseason. So I just applied to a couple teams, was fortunate enough to be given an opportunity with the Tampa Bay Rays. This was back in 2009. From there, I was with the Rays for a few years. I had a stint with the Padres and another 2 year stint with the Cleveland Indians. With the Indians, I was essentially in the rehab setting. I worked with all the organization's injured athletes. That kind of gave me a little bit of a platform to learn a little bit more and dig a little bit more into, you know, why certain injuries occur and how to recondition rehab athletes from the physical performance side back to play. So from there, 2 years ago, I was again given another great opportunity to come back with the Tampa Bay Rays in the position that I'm currently in as the minor league strength and conditioning coordinator.
Okay, so you obviously worked well enough with them earlier that they were happy to bring you back.
Yeah, it's all about opportunity, man. It's you know, I'm very grateful for all the people that have been involved in the process. So, you know, I'm glad I made an impact years ago when I was here and have done some things over my career to allow me to have this opportunity today.
Cool. And what exactly does being a minor league strength and conditioning coordinator involve kind of on a day-to-day basis? I think a lot of people don't quite understand what this really means.
The short version of it is direct oversight of the physical preparation programs of our minor league affiliates. In our organization, we have seven minor league affiliates, which are essentially the developmental system for our major league team. And essentially, my day-to-day operations is really guiding my staff that oversees those individual affiliates to help them come up with individualized programs, you know, based on many variables that we look in, such as workload data, game performance, affiliate travel, feedback provided from our field staff and front office on individual player needs. So essentially, my role is, you know, exactly the title, coordinating. I kind of coordinate all of my staff to help them have the best programs for our athletes to help in these individual player development.
So basically you and your staff are involved basically with developing the next Rays talent. Does this change the type of program you would put together versus players that are already at the major league level?
Yeah, I'll say, you know, there's two parts to that, being that a lot of our younger players have a lot of different needs than the guys who eventually make it to our major league roster. But that doesn't mean that the philosophy and the training means and methods are really that much different. It's more of just how we go about interacting with the players and to meet their individual goals. You know, we have guys that come over from our Latin America academies that are very young and have a very low training age. And we have some kids from the United States that may have been part of some big college programs that have been exposed to, you know, different types of training means. So it's very individualized across the entire spectrum of development, but more so as the levels get higher, I'll say the way that we go about prescribing different types of training stimuluses or our program starts to change as we get up to like the AA, AAA level, kind of transitioning to the major league role. There's a lot of continuity between our upper levels going into the major league. So a lot of those players have been around for some time, either in our organization or come to us from free agents. So maybe they have done some different things at other places that they've been. But overall, our system and our philosophy and how we kind of go about the, like I said, the means and methods of training doesn't really change much across the board. It's just how we individualize that as that player's career progresses.
Okay, so with kind of the focus on that individualization, how do you balance, you know, optimizing the physical side with keeping these skill coaches happy?
I think a lot of our, how we individualize and create our programs are, you know, a combination of a few things. One, all of our assessments that we perform when players show up to our facility, either in their off-season programs or for spring training. We do a little bit of a battery of assessments from anthropometric measures and joint measurements, range of motion, mobility, to, you know, some more performance-based perimeters. And that's essentially our starting point to see where guys lay out. Those tests by no means mean that a player is going to be playing at a superior level. It just gives us an idea of where they are from a physical standpoint, a athletic standpoint. And then from there, you know, another huge part of it is talking to our field staff and things that they see. You know, a lot of our assessments are based on just pure athletic versus, you know, what our hitting coordinators and fielding coordinators may see. So essentially, you know, we kind of take all of the information hand in hand and try to bring it all together to help have that best or ideal program for that individual player. Like I said, a lot of the information that we get from our field staff as far as what their eyes see usually matches up with some of our performance assessments. Sometimes it doesn't, but it at least starts the conversation of us trying to figure out like exactly what this player needs to develop. If we have a field personnel that says, you know, a player needs to develop some first step quickness or agility, and maybe by our performance assessments, they fall in that average above average range, we still need to dig a little bit more into that and see what exactly it is that they are looking for. So again, it's a combination of things that we use from what I do specializing in my field, as well as whatever the field staff we're working with, whatever their specialization is, whether it's hitting, fielding, defensive side, you know, pitching side, all of those essentially conversations help us develop these programs.
Okay. And over the last, let's say, 10 years, you've been working with baseball players. You've probably seen quite a few. Besides God-given talent, what, if anything, kind of had all the players had in common that have actually made it to the league? Is there something that you've seen in all of them?
For me, it's the ability for the individuals to develop routines, live a lifestyle that, you know, balances the person and the athlete or baseball player, and essentially embrace the work and recovery that it needs to allow them to have success. You know, a big thing in baseball is, you know, we compete every single day, and a lot of people don't realize this, but there is a game pretty much 7 out of 7 nights of the week. You know, very rarely are there off days scattered in there, and there is a, you know, at the minor league level, we play up to 142 games, you know, in the season, not including spring training and playoffs. At the major league level, you know, 162, same thing, not including spring training and playoffs. So the players that develop really good routines, whatever they are, that helps them as an individual to be able to answer the bell every day at 7 o'clock, you know, those things are the biggest things that kind of stand out to me as far as what separates guys that can make it to the major league level, stay there, continue to have success. Because we see some really talented individuals, even in our player development system, that sometimes may not ever develop those types of work habits and routines. And unfortunately, you know, maybe they're a little bit more inconsistent with their performance. I think it's the ability to want to put in the work, live a lifestyle that's conductive of an athlete, and embrace the work and recovery modalities needed to be able to continue to have success.
Okay, I'm glad you actually brought up that player lifestyle. I was going to touch on that too. And so the routine away from the practice facility, is this something you take into account? Do you have any influence over that? Or kind of how does that play out for you as the, you know, the head of the strength and conditioning coordinating?
Yeah, I think for me and from our end, all we can do really essentially is, you know, just try to preach essentially what we're looking to get out of these athletes, and that, you know, certain lifestyle habits don't contribute to athletic performance or development for that matter. You know, there's not a whole lot of control that we have when guys, you know, leave the park. So we can be a positive influence in their life and hopefully steer them in the right direction. And hopefully the players, you know, take a lot of this information into play. I think how nutrition and our essentially lifestyle hygiene, rest and recovery has essentially the education has gotten so much better over the last few years. I think that you start to see a change in what the players do, you know, now as compared to 5-10 years ago. So, you know, there are definitely battles that we face with things along that line. But like I said, all we can try to do in our role as a support staff is be a positive influence, you know, within those players' life and career.
And you brought up 140 plus games in a season. And that really kind of, when I was checking up on you guys in February for spring training, one thing caught my ear was hearing about these travel schedules for some of the affiliate teams, playing a game, taking an 8-hour bus ride, playing the next morning. Kind of how do you adapt the training programs for these types of schedules?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's one of the many variables that from a physical preparation standpoint and performance standpoint, we have to keep in mind is it's not just about, you know, the workouts and the conditioning sessions and even the games for that matter. There's a lot of variables that come into play when we're talking about player performance and health and longevity. And some of the biggest battles that we have, you know, across the board from our lowest levels, you know, even at the major league level is the travel schedules. You know, you could say, all right, the major league level, maybe they have like charter flights and things like that, but, you know, they're still changing time zones. They're getting in the cities at 4 a.m. and having to bounce back and play the next day. So at every level, you know, that's definitely something that we keep in mind. You know, one of our one of our lower level affiliates in the Midwest League, you know, they have bus rides regularly of 6 to 8 hours. And that's on some of the lower end. So, you know, how we handle everything from times that we go to the park, van times or bus times that the players go to the park, giving them time to sleep in a little bit, you know, how we handle the workloads for that day, both from the physical preparation strength conditioning side and what the field staff do. You know, everybody is very aware across the board of those types of things that are going to affect how that player feels at, you know, come game time. So it's an all-inclusive effort to try to make sure that we do what's best for the player from a developmental standpoint and keep those things in mind and not just say, you know, we're all here, you know, let's just go have at it and grind away, because, you know, sometimes that's not the best choice when it comes to those types of things, you know. So it's, like I said, it's an all-inclusive effort and it's definitely something at every single level we have that, you know, we have that challenge.
So it seems like there's been a little bit of change in philosophy. It's taken some time, but kind of the old school mentality of, okay, we're going to wake them up at 7, we're going to go to the park, do some hitting and throwing, as to, you just mentioned, letting guys sleep in. I think that was something a few years ago, you know, 5-10 years ago, that they wouldn't even consider. Is that kind of how you see it evolving as well too?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. I mean, over the years that I've been, I mean, even coming back with the Rays, we have a really good sports science program that puts a lot of effort into, again, education of all staff and front office involved in those types of decisions that, hey, sometimes getting like an extra hour of sleep is actually a little bit more beneficial. So, you know, during spring training, it's something that maybe having a slightly later start time for the day and maybe just trying to be more efficient with our time during those workouts, meaning that, you know, we may not need these big gaps like an hour in between, say, a game or an hour in between workouts, whereas, okay, if we can get on the field at this time, it's a little bit later, it allows the players to sleep in a little bit later. You know, eventually we're going to get a more finely tuned product essentially on the field when these guys are resting better, eating better, you know, better hydration strategies, you know, all those sorts of things.
Definitely. I think that like makes a lot of sense. As far as your own programming, previously, I know you've spoken about microdosing. What are some of your own philosophies you brought to the Ray strength and conditioning program?
So I think a lot of it's just been the evolution of my career personally, and kind of a combination of how the strength conditioning or physical preparation field has progressed. One of the biggest things that I try to think about when we prescribe exercise or conditioning sessions, just like when we're prescribing, a doctor prescribes medicine, I view it as the same thing. We want to know, or at least have a good idea of what that stress is, how much it is, and what type of effect is it going to have on the player. So regardless of what type of workout or conditioning session that we do, I think that if there can be a really good thought process behind the specific goal that you're trying to get out of that session, you're going to leave less room for question. And again, maybe it's better to play a little bit on the safe side than overly aggressive side and push players to a state of overreaching or overtraining. We know once guys get to that level, it's kind of tough. It takes more sometimes than a day or two to get them back to what we would say like a good level of readiness. So I think my philosophy or my system as a whole is more so just using all of the variables that we talked about before as far as, you know, travel, scheduling and training doses and even the individual training session that you are getting ready to prescribe an athlete. Going into that session, have in mindset exactly what you're looking to get, whether it's a specific biomotor quality that you're looking to address, like speed, power, or strength. You're looking to address general work capacity or mobility. I think too often in this field that, you know, there's a lot of trends and with social media now that it's easy to say, oh, we do this exercise because it increases this quality. And a lot of times that's just an arbitrary statement. You know, this exercise will increase your rotational power. Well, how are you measuring that? How do you know that it's actually doing that? So be very specific in the outcome that you're looking to get out of that training session and understand what that outcome is. And I think that's where a lot of the technology now comes in, is that a lot of these things either have or have not been around for a really long time. Maybe they weren't utilized as good as they could be, but it just gives us a tool to help us say like, okay, that lift session, you know, we hit at these velocities, or that conditioning session, we hit at these heart rate zones, versus just having a stopwatch on a guy or just using a percentage of a one rep max. You know, those are all great methods and means, especially when you're working with, I'll say, lower level athletes that don't have a lot of training age. But when you get athletes that are a little bit more developed, I think you should be a lot more specific and objective in your assessments of how, what you're exactly prescribing to that player or that individual.
So it sounds like to me, you're avoiding hopping on the bandwagon and also avoiding doing stuff that's just always been done because that's how it's been, that you really have something to back up everything that you do, not just because, like you said, somebody on social media posted it or it's because some other team does it.
Exactly. And that's where a lot of our training methods and means, again, haven't changed much over the years. You know, what I learned as a young strength and conditioning coach is stuff that I use now and has been used, you know, for decades before. By no means did I invent any of this or taking credit. I'm just using of guidelines that have been put in place for years. So it's more so just like, hey, how can I objectively measure or define what I'm trying to prescribe to this individual? You know, and I guess a large example is every individual will have a different response from a certain stimulus based on all of their athletic abilities and biomotor qualities. So I think, you know, prescribing one general program for every single player within your sport or department or environment that you're in, it may be great for some guys and it may be great for the average guy, but sometimes it may not be enough or sometimes it may be too much. So I think for me, that's just like my overall system is how can we get extremely specific without it being overkill, but how can we help out this individual?
Okay, excellent. Let's hop over a bit to how you're implementing First Beat with the Rays now. In terms of player monitoring, this is your second season with First Beat. Why did you choose to go with us in the first place?
Again, kind of going back to some of my, I guess, thought process with program development is that a few years back when I was working with the Cleveland Indians in that rehab setting, I had some exposure to some different wearables and just playing around with it with some of our rehab athletes. Again, I would prescribe a certain conditioning session. And in the past, you know, you had the stopwatch and these guys would go out and complete whatever that session was, whether it was running or some type of interval circuit or cardio circuit. But I would still have a specific goal of what I was looking to get at. So say today's day is supposed to be a tempo run with a big focus on recovery. And what I was seeing was that there's maybe two individuals or three individuals completing this exact same exercise prescription, and they're having completely different responses. Whereas the one guy actually was working in some zones that would be conductive of recovery versus the other athlete was working in zones that were actually maybe contributing to some extra fatigue. That may not be a problem short term, but what happens is when you do that over time, that's when that fatigue starts to accumulate. That person digs deeper and deeper into a hole versus, you know, coming out of it and having some super compensation where they get better. This person actually goes on to continue to have fatigue, and you keep prescribing this exercise and this intensity because everybody else is doing it. So I think one of the things that I first looked at was like, hey, how can we objectively measure what a conditioning session looks like? And I started to dig around to a few different companies. You know, I was looking for something that had a user-friendly platform that could provide real-time feedback for, you know, myself or my strength and conditioning staff that are using it and allow it to help individualize exactly what a individual conditioning session would look like for a position player or a pitcher. You know, the biggest part more so of the pitchers because those guys condition daily just because of the nature of their position. So, you know, like I said, looking around for a few different types of options that I had and came across First Beat and, you know, kind of went from there. We had you come into our facility and I really liked, again, everything that we saw as far as like the user interface and metrics that we were provided with.
Okay, yeah, and I want to touch on the metrics that you just mentioned. Which ones are you looking at and kind of how are you implementing the system there at Port Charlotte?
I have a specific quality that I'm looking for when I prescribe a conditioning session. And I just want to make sure that that conditioning session that we're prescribing, both real time and looking at the end of the session and going back over time, that we're reaching those types of, again, effects that we're trying to gain through those individual sessions. So some of the metrics that I look at are essentially just training effect to see what their total day look like from the time they go through their warm up, conditioning session, throwing program, bullpens, defensive work, all those things. And then I'll look at time spent in certain heart rate zones. Kind of going back, a lot of what I base off of our philosophy kind of goes back to like some of the old Charlie Francis stuff is that, you know, high CNS, low CNS days. And he would classify, say, a anaerobic threshold type day as it's not necessarily a high CNS day, but there's enough of a mechanical stress and physiological stress that it causes for extra time for recovery. essentially there are days that we prescribe that I don't want guys to work in certain heart rate zones. And it's not always, I'm not dogmatic with it, but I don't want a pitcher every single day that they perform a conditioning session to be working in these high heart rate zones. Cause what happens is that essentially is just accumulated fatigue. It's not always improvement in, you know, aerobic and anaerobic quality. Sometimes what happens is with all of the other variables that come into our day with daily competition, travel, sleep, all those things, if we continue to work in certain zones that require extra recovery, we eventually dig that player into a hole. So I like to look at time spent in certain heart rate zones and then essentially look at like the quality of a given conditioning session and the length of that specific session.
Okay. And I know like when you have everybody on site for early spring training, it's a lot easier, you know, to monitor guys. But when you send them out and they're at the affiliates and, you know, there's four different first beat systems with four different teams in four different cities before you had it, how were you kind of keeping track of everybody and trying to hold people accountable for those training sessions?
You know what? Like we just did general tracking of total distances and volumes and things of that nature. You know, if they run 5 20-yard sprints at a certain intensity, we still use those methods of grading out. But this just gives us one more layer of protection as to what actually is going on during those sessions. So we did have ways of tracking and monitoring these things. The issue is, again, even with my coaching staff at the affiliates firsthand, watching a guy run like a given conditioning session, sometimes it's hard with the eye to really pick up what's going on inside their body. And I think that's the biggest advantage that we have with this is that, again, we have a specific quality that we're trying to address. And now we have this objective measuring tool essentially to allow us to really individualize those conditioning sessions and be sure. So as far as tracking things before, again, it was just general volumes and that's across the board. I mean, every team that I've been part of have done something very similar, but like I said, just having that extra layer of defense and the making sure that nothing is really standing out. Like that example I gave to you with the guys that were in that rehab setting, you know, this is one layer of defense of not pushing that guy into overtraining or accumulating long-term fatigue.
Okay. And you mentioned, you've talked a lot about pitchers already in this previously here and in conversations that we had. Kind of what exactly do you do with the pitchers? What's the protocol you use with first beat? How do you use the system with these guys?
So essentially when our players arrive in the off season, I will say we use the quick recovery test quite often just because of the setting. Players come in the morning and we have like that set schedule. In season, that's tough because players arrive at 2 o'clock. So, you know, a lot of guys have already had driven in traffic. They've had coffee or they've been awake for a few hours. Maybe have had a morning workout if they're on the road. So essentially the biggest use of for us in season is, you know, the pitchers come in before they go out in the field for their warm up. You know, they strap up. Our coaches will take the system out. We take the pitchers through their daily warm up. They go through their throwing program and conditioning. And then again, whatever is in that day's workout, whether it's, you know, PFPs or defensive work, they have a bullpen. So essentially the coach at that affiliate will use the software that live real-time monitoring to drive the conditioning session. And then once they get into all of their defensive work, that's where I talk about like going back and looking and seeing what type of effect that had on that player. Or a lot of the information that we get from, you know, a player wearing it during, you know, when they're throwing a side or their bullpen essentially is like their practice. We want to see what type of, you know, response that they have. You know, a lot of guys, well, I'll say some guys may have a really high level of emotional arousal where there's not a ton of mechanical work being done, but the adrenal response, you know, jacks up that heart rate. So how do we prescribe conditioning sessions for that player throughout the week to, again, promote recovery for that guy who has a really high level of emotional arousal versus there may be another player that, you know, when they're throwing their bullpens, everything's nice and easy and that may fit their personality and how they handle themselves in games. So again, how we would prescribe conditioning sessions for that individual pitcher during the week, you know, we use based on some of the, I don't want to call it, it's not game action, but it's as close to what we would get to that setting on a small scale. So what a day looks like essentially, as far as what the pitchers will do when they're wearing it.
Excellent. And how has the buy-in been for the players and coaches with the real-time monitoring?
You know, there's always, you know, when you first try something new, there's always going to be people asking questions, but I try to be very transparent and tell my coaching staff to be very transparent of what we're looking to do and what we're trying to accomplish. And, you know, when we explain to the players and coaching staff that it's to help individualize programs to allow for individual development and make sure that the work that we're prescribing is specific to that person, then guys, they're like, okay, I'm on board. You know, we offer to share the reports that are generated with the players. Some guys want to see it. Some guys, after you tell them what we're trying to look at, they don't care care. They just trust you as you oversee the strength, conditioning, or physical preparation side of my game. So I trust your knowledge base, and you know, they don't ask to see anything. Like I said, some of our coaching staff, it helps us give them a little clearer idea of, again, what we're trying to do when we're prescribing these conditioning sessions and things that we're looking for, and how we're trying to minimize fatigue. And fatigue is there's always going to be something, because it's caused by so many ways. This is just one variable that we can, you know, try to put a check in the box, like, okay, we have an idea of what this looked like, so we can cross off this variable. You know, we can't change the bus ride times. So as many variables as we can try to monitor and control, it's going to give us a better, essentially, insight and understanding of what's going on with the player and how to drive performance ultimately.
And do you have any example of some of the data you've got influencing actual training decisions?
Yeah, so kind of going back to, you know, talking about when a pitcher would wear it during their bullpen, to me, that's like the biggest thing that I would try to use to influence how we address that individual's work that we prescribe on the week. Like I said, we don't use this information in games. A lot of it's just because whether it's the player feeling comfortable wearing it, or we have issues with obviously a CBA and things like that. We don't really get a whole lot of game action, but if we see like what a player does or his emotional arousal with a bullpen session, or even just like a conditioning or defensive session, it allows us to say like, okay, hey, this guy probably has like a really high emotional response during a game when he's pitching five innings, let alone, you know, a 30 pitch bullpen. So this is probably how we want to prescribe his day one of conditioning. Or another example would be like in our off season camps, how we would use it is essentially seeing how players come in after having the weekend off from training. Some guys, you know, use the weekends to really rest and recover. Some guys may not have great nutrition or hydration strategies, and those guys maybe come in Monday or Tuesday and their overall training effect or training response is a little bit higher. So it allows us to maybe make minor tweaks and maybe not necessarily the training program, but, you know, conversations that we have with those players as far as nutrition and hydration strategies and sleep strategies. So we try to use this again objectively to help drive all of those training programs, essentially everything that we prescribe.
All right. And on the practical side with First Beat, how much time does the system add to your weekly workload?
We have a bunch of different technologies and things that we monitor, and it's just one extra platform that that I kind of like, again, dig through it as far as a layer of defense each day, maybe 10 to 15 minutes for me each morning for my staff that rolls out essentially the technology at their affiliate. You know, same thing, maybe an extra 10 minutes to just set up and make sure everybody has on their units and everything's up to date. It doesn't really add that much time once the players get into the habit of it. Each coach handles it differently based on their affiliates, whether they're at home or on the road, and, you know, how they want to go about passing out the belts or allowing the players to have accountability. So after essentially the first week of the season, it kind of becomes more of just, you know, part of what the players do on a daily basis, and it doesn't really add a ton of extra time.
Okay, that's good to hear. And kind of the last thing I wanted to touch on is it's well known in Major League Baseball. They've been big on data, or the movie Moneyball came out. You know, there's obviously a ton of data that they use, strategic stuff. But the uptake of like physiological measuring, you know, heart rate monitoring in particular, seems to be quite slow to spread in the league. Why do you think that is?
You know, I think every organization is different in things that they value. And I don't think anybody is right or wrong. I think a lot of it has to do with, again, the physical demands of the sport. It's not something like lacrosse or basketball or, you know, football, soccer, American football, that traditionally you would think that those guys, part of their game is, you know, they need to be very fit, both aerobically and anaerobically. I think part of maybe the behind this in Major League Baseball is that maybe some places don't see a ton of value in those types of things, because they're not worried about, you know, like I said, what a short-sighted game looks like in football, because we don't have a lot of those types of things within our game. Every organization is different. Every individual, whether it's physical preparation or the sports science programs, are different and have different metrics that they try to track that help them, you know, steer towards performance or health. You know, for me, this is just one of the things I think really helps, you know, give us a little bit of more objective information for things that we're prescribing. And that kind of goes back to my values and my philosophy and my systems is, you know, I want to be very specific and understand and know what a workout session or a conditioning session's effect was on that player versus just saying, hey, go do 3 sets of 10, you know, with this exercise and it's going to increase strength. You know, for some people that may work, you know, for an undertrained athlete, but when your athletes start to become more highly trained, you have to be more careful, I'll say, of what you prescribe. And that's where I feel like for my philosophy, for my system and how we use it in our organization, I think I'm not sure if everybody else thinks that same way, or if they, you you know, view these things as important. But from what I've learned over the years and things that I've seen from a practical side, and then a lot of the people that I kind of look to and follow as far as developing my training systems and how I bring it all together, I think this is a big part of what I like to see as far as how we prescribe training programs.
So the feeling I really get from this conversation is this is objective data that's just going to help you individualize each athlete's program.
Absolutely. I don't like to chase numbers, and I don't like to, you know, go too far down rabbit holes and look for things purely based off of performance assessments, because you can have guys that are extremely talented and extremely fast, but just watch the NFL Combine. There's a lot of guys that are unbelievably gifted that can run fast and jump high that, you know, may never make it at the high level in the NFL, you know, or may get signed. So, you know, for me, I want to have as much objective information as I can to help, you know, drive our programs, to help drive performance and, you know, long-term health.
All right, great. Well, that's all the time we've got for this episode. Thanks a lot, Pat, for taking the time out of your schedule to talk to us today. We really appreciate it. And best of luck for the rest of the season.
Awesome. I appreciate you having me.
And thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, feel free to drop a review on iTunes and subscribe.
Thanks for listening to the First Beat Sports Podcast. For more information about us and our sports monitoring systems, give us a call at 435-363-9533. Or you can send us an email to sports@firstbeat.com. You can also visit us online at www.firstbeat.com. Thanks a lot for listening today, and don't forget to be with us on the next edition of the First Beat Sports Podcast.